U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Democrats in Congress are still at odds over many pieces of their reconciliation bill, with President Biden about to leave the country and an October 31st deadline looming. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. The headlines keep saying that a deal is just around the corner here, but to my eye, there are still a lot of Democratic factions that are at fundamental odds with each other. And I'll read a quote from Jeff Merkley, the Oregon senator. He said, "There's just huge pieces of this that are not nailed down. So each time I hear, well, it's almost done, I don't know what the hell people are talking about," unquote. And so, Bill, to start here, why do we keep hearing this, that a deal is just around the corner if these factions in the Democratic Party are farther apart than they seem?
Well, I think, one, there's a lot of wishful thinking about this, that they can get it done. And two, I think that the two main obstacles, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, have been largely quiet. Like, when they've spoken in general terms, they've been saying, yes, we can talk, we're sitting down. And I think that's created a false optimism because, as you point out, I think on fundamental issues, they're still far apart. You know, Bernie just laid down his sort of red lines on Medicare expansion. AOC says, we're not going to vote on the bills the way Nancy Pelosi wants until we actually have an actual bill, reconciliation bill, she means, that they can look at, not just a framework. So a lot of the other people seem to be hardening their positions on this. And I think it comes down to this. There is no bill until there is a bill, by which I mean text written down, and we can look at what provisions made it in and what provisions didn't make it in. And that's the tough part, because there's a lot of objection on each side on a lot of pieces of this puzzle.
Just so people don't think that I'm cherry-picking Jeff Merkley there, I'll give a perspective from the other chamber of Congress. Here's Pennsylvania Representative Brendan Boyle. He says, we are just missing two things. What exactly is going to be in the bill and how we're going to pay for it? Other than that, we're good to go, unquote. And so, Kim, at least he hasn't lost his sense of humor.
Yeah, the press is really to blame here, and I'm happy to see that the press is finally quoting some people talking honestly, because what's been happening is the White House and congressional leaders have been on a campaign to say all is good, and to do that in a way that forces Manchin and Sinema to get on with it. And the reality is, let's just go through the list, okay? So here's what hasn't been decided yet. They have not decided how to pay for this thing, okay? The House and Senate have got very different approaches on this. The House bill that was actually passed out of committee actually tries to raise all of its money by mostly raising corporate tax rates, individual tax rates. Kyrsten Sinema has said no to that. As I think we're going to talk about a little bit more, Senator Wyden has now put out a billionaire's tax. Turns out Joe Manchin may have an issue with that. There is some agreement around a corporate minimum tax, but that's not something that's passed the House. So that's all. The revenue side remains a mess. Medicare. Bernie Sanders has said, yes, we must have the power to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies to lower the price of drugs for Medicare. And yes, we must expand Medicare benefits. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are still saying no to those things. Paid family leave. They had hacked down their proposal. It was at 12 weeks. They got it to 4. Manchin is still saying he doesn't want to do it. He's being lobbied by people like New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, but that's not been sorted out. Medicaid expansion to the dozen red states that have not signed up for the program. House Democrats are insisting on that. Joe Manchin has said that he has real issues with the fairness of that proposal. There are still people attempting to get an immigration provision into this, even though the Senate parliamentarian killed the first attempt at that. SALT, the repeal of the state and local tax deduction, that's not been sorted out. The IRS snooping provision, that hasn't been sorted out. You know, if you step back, what I sort of see here, and it's interesting, is that Joe Manchin apparently said what he meant and meant what he said back in that document he gave Chuck Schumer before all of this began. And what we've really been doing for the past like 6 weeks is having liberals come to grips with the fact of that reality. And this thing is slowly getting whittled down. And as Bill said, the question is going to be how long before the progressives say no and this thing breaks apart.
Let me go first to this billionaire's tax, because we talked about this on the podcast yesterday, and we asked a lot of questions that did not have answers, and we have some of those answers now. Senator Wyden has released the text of this proposal, and Bill, one of the things we talked about was the question of what you do with illiquid assets that are difficult to value, art collections, and so forth. And the way that he's proposing to deal with that problem is to just essentially not apply the tax to them mark to market year after year like he would do with stocks and so forth. But you would wait until you sell the asset, and then you would get a little bit of an interest penalty on it to make up for the difference, because you weren't paying the tax all along. And the issue there, Bill, is it seems to me that would be a big incentive maybe to take companies private or to keep companies private, but treating these assets differently creates all sorts of opportunities for gamesmanship of the tax code, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that whatever scheme they have is just going to prove unworkable and unfair, and we're going to have a lot of unintended consequences, as you mentioned, you know, whether it's companies going private. It also seems unfair. If you buy a stock for $10 and you sell it 10 years later for $100, you know, you pay the tax on the $90 plus another penalty. It's essentially a penalty on top of whatever capital gains you pay. And that could be because in the middle there, it had a big rise. I just think these are unworkable. I don't see how they can get this through. I mean, a wealth tax, as we mentioned yesterday, has constitutional issues, has practical issues. I don't think that like squeezing this through to get something on paper before the president leaves for a trip abroad is the way to reform your tax code. And I just can't believe that something of this magnitude is going to be able to be snuck in and everyone will sign off.
The other big question we had yesterday was how you handle losses if an asset rises and the billionaire pays the tax and then there's a correction, stock market falls, what have you. Does he get a refund on that? And the answer seems to be yes. The Wyden proposal would allow losses to carry forward and to carry backward for 3 years. But again, it seems like this is adding complications to the code that's going to lead to problems. I mean, you can imagine situations where somebody is an owner or founder of a company that is way overvalued in the stock market. You can put your own name on that if you want. And after paying all the taxes, as it rises to that value, it settles back to the fundamentals, and this owner, founder, what have you, can carry back those losses for 3 years, can carry them forward, but it's not clear, Kim, that he would be able to get a refund of everything that he paid on what were basically paper gains.
Correct. This is interesting because the Wyden proposal in general is very different than what, for instance, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders first proposed as a wealth tax. Their idea is that you get taxed on your wealth on a year-to-year basis. So, for instance, if you had an asset and you owned a $100 asset, you'd get taxed on $100. Wyden, I think, in an attempt to make this not quite so progressive, not quite so punitive, has attempted to come up with a program where instead you're only taxed on appreciation. And so that means that if you had an asset of $100 and then it was worth $110 at the end of the year, you'd be taxed on the $10 rather than the whole $110. That's much better for the economic system if you were going to go down this road overall, but it still adds this layer of complexity. And then, as you were saying, Kyle, you get into this question of marked to market and both appreciation and losses. How do you handle all of that? There's a lot of complication. There's a provision that allows wealthy individuals to treat up to $1 billion of their their tradable stock in a single corporation as a non-tradable asset. This is a realization that in some circumstances, this tax could perform in a way that would cause them to lose control of the businesses that they have started and run. But that also introduces a whole new level of complexity and potential gamesmanship, as you said. So all of this just underscores how complex this is, and it's why already you see Joe Manchin suggesting he's not into this, not just because of the complexity, but because he doesn't like the idea of a tax that targets individuals or groups of individuals. And it's why you're also now again seeing Congress talking about even an entirely different provision, which is to go back to this idea of imposing a 3% surtax on millionaires, those that earn more than $5 million a year, in part because it's simpler, although that would hit a lot more people.
Hang tight, we'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. One last thought on the billionaires tax and this issue of targeting individuals. As we discussed yesterday, the proponents of this billionaires wealth tax say that it would hit about 700 Americans. But there's a notable analysis in the Washington Post that looks at who would be essentially paying it over the first 5 years of it. And part of what is important to understand in this calculation is the way they are proposing to set this up. All prior gains, when the tax goes into effect, all prior gains would be taxed within the first 5 years. So, stock that Amazon's founder or Tesla's founder have had since or very early in the companies that they had a very low cost basis for would be taxed essentially immediately in these first 5 years. And so what this analysis finds is that over these 5 years, about half, more than half, I think, looking at the chart, of this tax would be paid by 10 people. Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Google's founders, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, the usual suspects. But Bill, this, I think, only amplifies the concern that we were discussing yesterday, which is you're really targeting it at a specific group of identifiable people.
Right. And that brings up other sort of constitutional issues such as bills of attainder and everything, you know, that are directed at individuals. For all these reasons, I think this is very doubtful. You know, Elon Musk yesterday put out a tweet, I think I mentioned, where he said, you know, they start out coming after one person, but sooner or later they run out of other people's money and they're going to come after you. And I think, you know, I would not be surprised to see a billionaire's tax end up hitting millionaires and then people lower down as we went on. These tax, once you institute them, they all go up. They don't go down, and they all go up, and they hit a lot of people that we were assured in the beginning they would never do. So I just don't see, you know, and politically, I think a lot of the Democrats think that's a plus because they can then tell the people, you know, you don't have to worry. It's just a handful of people that are going to pay for all this. But I think it's going to wreak havoc. I just don't see how in 2 or 3 days they can come up with a workable billionaire's tax that would actually function and not have all these massive problems and get it through Congress. I just don't see how that's possible.
One place where Democrats are finding more agreement is on a new proposal in this bill for a 15% corporate minimum tax. That would apply to big companies that have more than $1 billion in profits over a 3-year period, and reportedly it would hit about 200 companies. Kim, what's your read of this? I mean, it looks similarly adding complexity to the tax code to me, though it looks more likely to be part of this bill, it seems, because all the Democrats are on board.
Yes. And that is the sad analysis. The sad truth of this is that, as Bill was just pointing out, none of this seems to be being driven by smart tax analysis. Nobody is saying, is this going to be good for the economy? Is it going to be bad for the economy? What are the unintended consequences? Instead, it's what can we all agree on and how can we get it done before the president flies off to Rome and then to Glasgow? And so this is designed to go after this elusive class of companies that supposedly, who, by the way, are using the tax code exactly as it's written, but have done so in a way that allow them to write off enough that they are not paying a very, very much of a corporate tax every year. Again, what they're doing is completely legal, but it is a kind of populist talking point, especially on the left. You know, we have companies that aren't paying anything. That's not exactly true, because there's all kinds of other taxes that corporations are responsible for. And also, by the way, let's also be honest, corporations don't ever pay taxes. They are pass-through organizations. It is their employees who pay them, or their consumers who pay them, their customers. But anyway, what they can all agree on, and the big news here is that there is something they can all agree on, because even Joe Manchin has come out now. He gave a press conference today, or answered questions from reporters, and said that he viewed that as a, quote, patriotic tax. The notion that this is a great country that gives lots of people opportunities, and everybody should be asked to put something in. And so he has signaled his endorsement of that. Kyrsten Sinema generally has as well. Their expectations from Democrats who put together this proposal, they're aiming to raise as much as $400 billion over 10 years. That's still an unknown, because this has never been officially scored by any of the congressional scorekeepers, so we'll see. But overall, they got a big problem, because corporate tax hikes are out. According to Sinema, individual tax hikes are out. The IRS snooping provision may be out, this idea that they could use enforcement to generate more revenue. And the billionaire's tax, it looks like it's got some real problems. So they may be down to a corporate minimum tax and not a lot else.
But on the point about it not being great policy, I mean, it adds complexity to the tax code. And a lot of these companies that are allegedly paying zero tax are doing so for a very good reason. And I'll read a line from the Journal story on this. It says, manufacturers and tech companies could be among those hit hardest by the plan because the tax breaks they currently benefit from, such as expensing capital investments or stock options, would effectively be limited. And I'll go back and underline expensing capital investments there, because isn't the whole point to give companies a reason to an extra incentive to build that plant, to buy that equipment? And Bill, it seems to me that this would change the calculation for some of those companies. If they're facing this 15% minimum tax, maybe they would say, we'll build the plant 2 years from now instead of next year.
Absolutely. It's going to affect everything. I mean, that's one of the myths, that people aren't responding to tax changes. I think it goes further than that. You know, we'd have to see what the formula is for other assets that you have. So if you're really, if you're Elon Musk and so forth, and you have all this money, do you build that plant, expand your company, or do you buy some real estate, buy a nice old house, or buy a Rembrandt or something? I mean, we don't quite know the outcome of that, but we know it'll be a calculation. You know, it just seems the whole tenor of the Biden administration is business is bad. They're getting away with not paying their fair share. Billionaires are bad. We have to punish them. You know, the real message should be to make it easier for anyone to become a billionaire. And, you know, that sounds fanciful, but I lived in Hong Kong for 10 years. And let me tell you, it was a reality. I know people that started out dirt poor and became billionaires. And that's, I think, the ethos we want here, to reward people, to encourage them to take risks and invest, and not to be making their decisions based on a complicated tax code. What's the best for tax purposes? How about what's the best to grow and expand your business, which means expanding jobs and opportunity for other people?
On the point about this IRS snooping provision, Kim, as you've raised, Manchin has reportedly said no to that. There's a Politico story that quotes him talking to Biden, and he reportedly says, "Do you understand how messed up that is? This cannot happen. It's screwed up." And just a reminder, this idea is to have banks, financial institutions, report to the IRS annually the inflows, outflows of bank accounts, financial accounts. The original threshold was anything over $600. Then they've raised it to $10,000. But Kim, if that's out, and maybe we don't trust Manchin's word on that one, or this reporting on it at least. But if that's out, then are they going to get the revenue from this IRS enforcement that they need to help pay for the bill?
Yeah, that's their other problem. So in addition to all the taxes that have now been nixed, they were estimating that they were going to recoup something like $700 billion over 10 years via enhanced tax collections. But they were claiming that they would be able to do it because of this snooping provision. So now they're in a really big pickle because what do they do? They can reduce that estimate for how much they're going to recoup, or they can leave that in place but admit that that they weren't being honest about the fact that they needed this snooping provision to get there. It's a very problematic issue for them. And another reality that people are not close here. I mean, the thing, if you just step back and you think about it, this is remarkable. They were banking like $700 billion of this bill on a provision that they hadn't vetted with one of the core senators who they need to have on board to pass this. And they've been doing this again and again and again. You know, this is fundamentally Bernie Sanders, just he dreamed up whatever he thought he could get away with. No one talked to the caucus. They got out way ahead of their skis, and now reality is very much biting.
So how much does the timing matter on all this? Bill, President Biden is supposed to leave tomorrow for an overseas trip, but as far as I can tell, he has not really been driving these negotiations. So do you think his absence is going to matter?
Well, what matters is he's not driving this because he's got an approval rating that has just dropped tremendously since they started this enterprise a few months ago. So he's really lost a lot of ability to persuade people, a lot of power and influence. You know, I think some of the Democrats would complain that the president hasn't taken leadership and just kind of left it where it's at. But again, one of the problems is this is being driven, and partly, you know, there's an October 31st deadline that Mrs. Pelosi had, but there's also the deadline he wants to take this on his trip because it includes the climate provisions that he would then use to show other nations that America is doing its share. So he goes overseas in a weakened form if there's no agreement. And of course, he kind of leaves things in limbo. There's going to be no White House meetings while he's gone. So again, these are all artificial deadlines. You know, President Biden said a few weeks ago, it doesn't matter whether it takes a few weeks, few days, you know, or a few months, but it really does matter. I think they realize if this goes past the election, if they don't have it before the election, the odds of reviving it get smaller and smaller.
Yeah, the other two elements of this timing is this October 31st deadline. That's when some transportation funding will expire, and then as Bill alludes to, the November 2 election and a governor's race in Virginia on the ballot that looks like it's very close. Kim, how much do you think those things are weighing on these negotiations?
You know, my view is that the one that really matters to them is in fact this Virginia and also New Jersey governor's race. They are very, very concerned that if Terry McAuliffe, the Democrat in Virginia, loses, that it's going to scare a bunch of their moderates who are going to wonder about their own political fates, and that this might discourage support for the bill. So in my mind, that's what they're really sort of worried about. And they've got another problem yet, too, just because I think if you look at this more broadly, It was very interesting, something else Joe Manchin said in his press conference today. I've had a sneaking suspicion for a long time that he and Kyrsten Sinema remain very miffed that they were both central to this infrastructure deal that was passed. They are, I think, pretty furious still that the House won't hold a vote. And Manchin said, just apropos of nothing in the middle of this press conference this morning, he goes, you know, all we're asking for is a vote on our infrastructure bill. And that really does have to make you wonder if they're essentially, while they're not publicly saying it, they're waiting, and they're waiting to see if their liberals and their caucus will move ahead with the bill that is their priority before they give any of those final timelines or frameworks for this bigger reconciliation bill. And yet you've got House progressives who are still saying they will not touch that bill until reconciliation is fully voted on in the Senate. And I don't know how the Democrats get out of that quandary.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.